Good afternoon. Hope everyone's doing well. Welcome to our weekly Landis-Sky Regional Council COVID-19 call. We appreciate you joining us. A few housekeeping matters before we get started. Everyone who joins the call will be muted, so we have to unmute you from our end. You need to speak. And we do that for security purposes, but if you have any questions, please enter that into the chat function. And we'll try to share those questions. You can also text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216 if you have any questions for any of our presenters. Also remind you that these calls are recorded. We try to place them on the Landis-Sky website. Sometimes we have a technical glitch and we're unable to have the call recorded, but most of them have been, and we include that. So on our website, if you want to come back and review those, that's on our COVID-19 page. There's also additional resources there. So today's call, we're honored to have Drew Christie with the Governor's Office with us. Drew has been very kind to join us for most of these calls and to give us an update from Raleigh and what's happening from Governor Cooper's perspective, so we're very grateful for that. Chris Kroll with EQV Strategic won't be joining us this week. There's not really a lot to report on the legislative level. Really, it's the actions at the federal level, and they're trying to negotiate the next CARES package. So I don't know if you saw earlier, the Senate Republicans released their proposal. The House has passed the version. So as Chris reminded us on our call last week, he said, unless you have a cell phone for Senator Schumer, Speaker Pelosi, or Senator McConnell, there's probably not a lot we can do because those individuals really need to work out a compromise. So we'll hopefully have Chris on next week to give us an update. But we're honored today we're going to have Jonathan Suits with Advanced Super Races. Jonathan serves on the Mountain Area Workforce Board and is chair of our youth committee. He's going to facilitate a conversation, and he, along with Christy Cheek with Landis-Sky and Mountain Area Workforce Development Board, they'll facilitate a conversation with several of our school systems on their plans for the fall. So we know it's a challenging time with COVID-19, so I think we're honored to have Buncombe County Schools, Asheville City Schools, Henderson County Schools, Franklin School of Innovation, and we have Transylvania County Schools with us as well. So I'll turn it over to Drew, and Drew, if you could give us an update from Governor Cooper's office. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me, and thank you to Landis-Sky Regional Council for hosting these meetings. I'll make mine kind of short and sweet this week. So as of today, there have been a total of 120,194 total cases of COVID-19. And there have been a little over 1.7 million tests done. So we're doing pretty well on testing. Our case numbers keep going up. And Secretary Cohen, head of North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, as well as Director Sprayberry, head of North Carolina Emergency Management, will be holding a call today at 2 o'clock, a briefing at 2 o'clock to update folks about COVID-19 and what's going on. So you can tune into your local PBS channel or view it through the Department of Health and Human Services website, and that'll be at 2 o'clock this afternoon, so directly after this call. I'm sure a lot of folks saw the governor's announcement on Tuesday. So starting at this Friday, tomorrow, July 31st, restaurants will be prohibited from selling alcoholic drinks after 11 o'clock p.m. Any local orders for an earlier alcohol curfew or other more restrictive rules will remain in place, but the rest of the state must follow the 11 p.m. Statewide alcohol cutoff. The state order does not apply to grocery stores or other retail. If you have any questions, please see the frequently asked questions in regards to Executive Order 153. Bars are closed for a reason. Public health experts and other states have shown that these are high transmission places. And so we don't want restaurants to turn into bars after hours. North Carolina's numbers are stabilizing, but they are too high. We have to do more to slow the spread of COVID-19 and get our numbers moving in the right direction. We cannot accept numbers this high because a surge that overwhelms our medical system and kills more North Carolinians could be right around the corner. I guess everybody also saw that this past week, the pandemic unemployment compensation program that offered an additional $600 to unemployed workers has expired. And Governor Cooper is urging Congress to take action to extend the PUA. And so as Nathan was talking about and as Chris Wall was talking about last week, these are things that are being worked out right now in Washington, and hopefully we'll get a resolution on it sometime very soon. And so lastly, North Carolina remains paused and safer at home phase two, as everyone is urged to practice the three W's. Wear a face covering, wash your hands frequently for at least 20 seconds, and wait 6 feet apart. And with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew, and appreciate that update from the governor's office. We've heard had several messages regarding a clicking sound on the call. We do not hear that from our end, so I don't know what we can do to stop that. Everyone should be muted on the call, so I apologize for that, but again, we don't know what is causing that, so I apologize for that irritation. I'm going to turn the call now over to Jonathan Suits with Advanced Super Braces. Again, Jonathan is chair of the Youth Committee with Mountain Area Workforce Development Board and is one of our leading employers in our region. So Jonathan will facilitate the remainder of this call. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for taking the lead.
Thank you, Nathan. I want to thank Mountain Area Workforce Development Board and also all the school systems, both public and private, for being on this call. It's very important, as we know, you know, things are changing. Schools are trying to come up with plans. Parents are trying to come up with plans. And I think it's, you know, good to kind of have the school systems talk a little bit about what they're doing, because everybody's in a little bit different mode, so to speak. And so I thank all the public and private school systems for being on this. We have a little bit of a time constraint with one of our speakers. So I'm going to start with Dr. Baldwin with Buncombe County Schools. And then I will get to everybody else with similar questions or some different questions as well. But Dr. Baldwin, I want to thank you for your time and being on this. And I know you've unveiled your Beyond Plan B, you know, school plan. And I would like to know, you know, what is that going to look like? And, you know, what's going to be different in the, you know, the distance learning this year as opposed to last year, if you could give us a little update on that.
Yeah, Jonathan, and thank you for having me on, Nathan. Drew, great to hear from you as well. Just the basics of what we're calling Plan B Beyond. Really, our plan is for 6 weeks at the beginning of the school year, the first 6 weeks. And that's August 17th through, I think it's September 25th. The first thing I would say is that we're around 23,000 students, and we sent three separate surveys over the past 2 months. And so we have, at this time, we have 39% of those students and families that have elected to begin the school year in a remote learning model of instruction, and they will remain in that model all the way through the first semester. That was a commitment that was made because we had to make a commitment with our staffing, of course. And so we know that they will be in remote learning mode all the way through about the middle of January. And that could extend beyond January as well, because we just don't know what's going on with COVID-19. And Nathan, you know, I heard all that clicking going on. I think it fits because it's a great analogy with COVID-19. It's a ticking time bomb, right? So I couldn't help but use that analogy with your clicking sound. For those 61% of the students, Jonathan, and parents that have elected to opt for opportunities to come in the building as they occur in these plans, we took K-12 students and we divided them into two groups. And for kindergarten through eighth grade in the first week, Monday through Thursday, and that's daily from 8 to 12:30, they will meet with their teachers. We will alternate those groups so that on Monday, group A will meet with their teacher. Then group B will come in on Tuesday, meet with theirs, follow back up Wednesday with group A, and then finish group B on Thursday. And it just gives an opportunity. We felt like it was important before we just launched everybody out to cyberspace that we, if we could, to try to have an opportunity for some face-to-face so that those students did know who their teacher was, get an opportunity for us from a logistics standpoint to make some exchanges with laptops that we anticipated we were going to need to make, as well as take care of any issues with the devices. But it also gave a bit of a foundation for what the remote learning model is going to be once K-8 begins week two, because that means for the next 5 weeks, they will be entirely remote. For high school, it's a little bit different. For high school, in order to meet their teachers, I think we can all recall back with a high school schedule, it's actually is 4 courses and 4 teachers. And so in order to accomplish that, it would take the 2 weeks, Monday through Thursday, again, alternating group A, group B, over those 2 weeks. Both weeks, Friday is remote only for all students, and it's also a planning opportunity for teachers. Again, trying to establish a good foundation before we go entirely remote. And for the high schools, again, going back to that schedule, for example, group A on Monday would meet just with their first period teacher, and then group B would meet with their first period teacher on Tuesday. And then again, we would alternate in sequence with the particular periods. And what we had to do in high school, because it is different, for a school like Robertson, you could high school, which is our largest, you could have a class first period that starts out in one end of that campus, and period two, period three could extend all the way to the opposite end of the campus. So the concern from the health standpoint, public health standpoint, was the commingling of high school students. So we had to mitigate that. And so that's the structure and the plan that we have in place. So again, from week three on through week six, our high school students will be in a remote learning phase. Now you ask what makes it different, what makes the remote learning model different than it was the last 3 months. Quite honestly, I think all of us were thrown into crisis management in mid-March, and our basically our buildings were closed. If you recall, we were in moved into that phase one. And so essentially we just had to do the very best that we could. And I know there's a number of my peers on this call and Zoom as well. And I mean, just kudos, I think, for everybody under those circumstances, how we were able to get the laptops distributed and how our teachers just did some incredible work with very minimal training and prep to provide that model. Expectations certainly this year are much, much higher. For Buncombe County Schools, our teachers will be in those buildings during those remote learning phasing. They'll be collaborating. There'll be additional training provided. They'll be planning in their PLCs. And so the key for, I think, the quality of remote learning that we want is the synchronization of instruction. because essentially we've got two groups. We've got those that are entirely remote, regardless of what plan we're in. And then we have that second group that, again, since the key word to this whole challenge that we've had is change, we could find ourselves in 2 or 3 weeks with the governor looking at the metrics and the data and shifting to a different plan. So we've got to be able to make transitions fluidly. And as long as we can keep the learning synchronized from the start, it's going to be a much better quality as we work through these transitions throughout the year. So I hope that answered your question.
I did, Dr. Baldwin. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you, you know, really going in depth as to what the difference between this year and next year is. I agree the school systems did a tremendous job with basically being stopped. You know, you guys were in motion, you guys were in a groove, you know, and you went from 100 miles an hour to zero, and you had to pick it up and try to get back to 100 miles an hour. And you had parents who were frantic. You had, you know, your staff, which I'm sure was frantic as well, because everything was completely thrown into disarray. And I think it's great, but I really appreciate you going into detail what's going to be different this year, because, you know, a lot of parents are a little bit hesitant as we get closer to the school year, like, well, we don't want to go back to what we had in March. We know they did the best they could, but, you know, it was really stressful for us and for the students. And, you know, that kind of brings me to my next question. You know, you have had to do, all the school systems had to do a tremendous amount of lifting in a short period of time. And you know, the differences between remote learning and in-person learning are tremendous. And, you know, not only is it tremendous in the differences in learning, but also you're basically, for the first 6 weeks and after, you're almost running two school systems, because you're running a remote learning system, and then if we get back into in-person learning, you're going to be running in-person learning. So can you just give me just a couple, or give us, you know, a couple things that are, you know, maybe added costs or barriers that you're seeing or issues that you're seeing, you know, and having to run two totally different systems this year, as opposed to in years previous where, you know, everybody went back to school in August and we all got out in end of May and beginning of June.
Well, you know, I don't know if you can put a cost on what the stress and the anxiety is going to be as we shift through all of these different plans. I know that's been a pretty, if you put a dollar figure on it, I would say it's pretty high already. But, you know, I think for the cost issue, one of the concerns we had that we're still going to need to work through is what the transportation piece is going to look like, because with both plan A and B, with the spacing restrictions, not only in the school building, but on those buses, we could anticipate some additional costs there, some additional runs that are going to have to be made to make sure we accommodate all of the kids. That's some of that is a good chunk of that still remains to be seen on how that will all play out. Some additional costs from a technology standpoint. We were put out about 452 hotspots the last 3 months of the school year. They're still in place, and we may find ourselves needing to add even additional ones. We surveyed, and we were fortunate. We had about 7% of our areas in Buncombe County that our hotspots wouldn't cover. So we're working hard to try to figure out how we can accommodate those, because that's a challenge when you, it's in the mountains especially, when you go remote. How do you make sure that you're able to connect with each and every one of our students? You know, what are the major barriers? I think in my mind, when you talk about moving into a remote learning model, like we are moving pretty quickly into that, all remote, it's worried about those highly vulnerable populations of students. The reality of it is that we've got a percentage of our students that will do absolutely wonderful with the virtual model and working on that computer, and they also, a percentage of them will have good, strong support from home with parents and grandparents that are tech savvy, that can assist them and provide that time with them. but we're concerned with that percentage that that could fall behind pretty easily. Certainly, two examples would be our, you know, some of our population in our exceptional children's area, our special needs area, our English language learners, which we certainly have a percentage of those that we have concerns with, because their learning is improved with that direct instruction and having that connection right there on the spot with the teacher. So that's some concerns, and even students taking advanced placement classes, you know, to have that opportunity to get the one-on-one little extra boost when they run into those challenges. So we did ask our board to give us allowance as long as we are in Plan B, even though we shift the remote, to give us opportunity to offer and look at options to bring students in those areas, those populations, to work with them in very small groups or even on a one-on-one basis inside the building. So all this remains to be seen. Again, there's no playbook for any of this because the game hasn't been played. So we're stepping into new grounds. But that's where I see it from our end in Buncombe County.
Thank you again, Dr. Baldwin. And just to let you know, this is, I guess it's public knowledge now, Nathan. I asked the youth committee, I've been working with Christy and Barbara and Nathan, that we have a separate call to discuss at-risk youth moving forward from COVID, because we see a huge potential for a lot of loss of students moving forward. So the youth committee, our next call, which will be our first youth committee call for the fall, will be on this in the near future. So we are going to be asking all the county schools to be a part of it to see how the Mountain Air Workforce Development Board, our nonprofit partners, and even businesses can get involved in helping keep the youth engaged and keeping them from getting overwhelmed during these times. So I thank you for bringing that up, Dr. Baldwin, because we will be doing that in the near future. I'm going to ask Dr. Bryant with Henderson County Schools. I thank you for being here on our Zoom call here. And I just want to know, you know, what's Henderson County doing? I know you're doing a little bit of remote in the beginning as well. Is there any differences from what Buncombe County is doing, or is there any similarities?
Thank you, Jonathan, and thanks to all for the opportunity to share a little bit today. In some ways, our planning is a little bit different than what you heard Dr. Baldwin talk about, and so appreciate his recognition of all the leadership that's taking place among our teachers and our families, and especially our students, in terms of being the most flexible during such an ever-changing time. Our Board of Education actually approved Plan C, that fully remote option, for students for the first 6 weeks of the school year, sort of recognizing some of the elements that are of concern in the community and wanting to support our students, our staff, and our greater school communities. And so that remote learning is going to be a far more proactive approach. You asked Dr. Baldwin about what the differences are in what it looked like during an emergency remote learning period and Plan C remote learning period as we open a new school year. Certainly, we're having to be very thoughtful about how you deliver now new content, how you connect new teachers with new students, how you prepare for that course of study. And so I think the most helpful way to think of it is, in that emergency period from March to June, it was a very reactive period. We were responding to what was taking place in that period of time. And this is a far more purposeful and intentional. When you think about live, synchronous, concurrent instruction, we're going to have the ability for students to essentially be following their course of schedule. And they're going to be logging into their classes almost as if they're on a bell schedule. When you think about our younger students all the way through our high school age students, we are going to be conducting orientations for those groups of students who we recognize are transitioning to a new environment. You think about your kindergarten students and imagining this being school for the very first time. And so we are going to be conducting face-to-face orientations for those students and their families, for our sixth grade students who are transitioning into middle schools, and for our ninth grade students who are transitioning into high schools. But I think it's most helpful to recognize that remote learning in Henderson County Public Schools is going to be an intentional planned daily schedule that parents and students will be able to follow. And it'll be on a reduced day, 8 o'clock until about 12 o'clock each day. And then the afternoons, there's going to be opportunity for parents and families to connect with their teachers in small groups or individually, and even schedule face-to-face tutoring and support and instruction. We recognize that the governor's permission for school systems to choose a plan B or plan C doesn't prohibit students from being in our school system. It simply limits the capacity of those students. And so in Henderson County, we're going to create opportunities to really work toward a face-to-face environment in a safe way for our students and for our staff, making sure that we really focus on what you heard Dr. Baldwin say about connectivity. And we mean that in a digital sense, but also in a human and a relational sense. The most valuable thing we know that schools do are bring people together. And even though the COVID environment is forcing us to stay apart in many ways, we want to connect our kids and the relationships that they have with their school community and with their teaching staff, and making sure that we can support a transition to a face-to-face environment as soon as possible. And so I think the structure, the frameworks that are in place, the energy that has gone into preparing for the start of a new school year has been our target since we knew the school year in May through June was going to be closed. And so our efforts are very intentional and proactive about creating engaging and innovative remote learning opportunities for our kids that help them prepare for face-to-face instruction as soon as possible.
And any other barriers that you're facing that are different than Buncombe County? I mean, we all are going to be facing in a lot of the counties the same barriers. You know, IT infrastructure is one of them. I was on a call this morning with Hometown Strong discussing urban and rural areas and the issues with IT infrastructure for students remote or distance learning, remote learning. And, you know, are there any other barriers other than that in transportation? Are you seeing, you know, anything that we're missing from Henderson County?
I think it's helpful to understand what so many of us have talked about, and I'm certain is true in the workforce and not just for every school system person on the call, but for every family in our communities, is the comfort, the capacity, and then the ability to move through both of those pieces. If we think about everybody as being kind of on a spectrum of their competence when it comes to supporting a remote learning environment, their capacity to do that, and then their comfort with it, we know, you know, you heard Dr. Baldwin talk about survey data. When we took in survey data from our parents and our families, they acknowledged all the logistical elements that make blended learning, remote learning, a challenge for us. You spoke to just internet connectivity, and I'll use an example of that. We know geography matters in our communities when we're talking about bus routes. There are some bus routes that we can't shorten, because the distance and the geography are what they are. And so if we have to run multiple routes, there are going to be some significant barriers there. There are areas where it doesn't matter if we issue a family and a student a hotspot, there is no internet connectivity, there's no cell service. You have to leave your residence. You have to be in that area. And we also know that, again, every family is uniquely positioned to experience what remote learning has looked like. And so I think when we talk about barriers, it's about helping to build that capacity in every family and being responsive to that in every way possible. You know, our teaching staff is being extraordinary about not just attending the professional development that will help their skill delivery, but also recognizing that we're coaching and teaching families who are reaching out to us and saying, how do I make this more successful for my child? How do I reduce the anxiety and stress of this opportunity? How do we delineate the isolation that comes from not being able to be in an environment that allows you to really engage developmentally and socially and emotionally? For so many of our children, when we talk about at-risk populations, we want to make sure that our children feel connected to their peers. And I think that that's a huge barrier, because so many people have used that expression, and Dr. Baldwin touched on this, but there is no playbook, there is no script for how you bridge those gaps. And so we're all being innovators in that respect. And so we're trying to be really critical thinkers about how we connect with our kids, how we recognize what the challenges are in each individual's home environment, and how we create engagement We create opportunities for learning that are fulfilling for our students and rewarding for our students, and really get them excited about what school is. And what we all love about it is being able to have our kids face-to-face as soon as possible.
Well, thank you very much for that. We have a lot of other public school systems on there. We have Madison County, we have Transylvania County, and I'm going to get to Dr. McDerris and Mr. Huey as well, but also Dr. Ayers from Asheville City. But I'd like to switch gears a little bit and go to Michelle with the Franklin School and see what the Franklin School is doing compared to the regular public schools as a charter school.
Sure, thanks. So thanks to everybody for participating today. And I think that as a public charter school, we face a lot of the same challenges, certainly as Henderson County and Buncombe County. I know I run a much smaller system, but we serve pretty much the same population. We serve students who don't have access to internet. We serve students who struggle with food security and with housing insecurity. And we serve a lot of students with learning differences who need a lot of support. And so I think we all are facing a lot of the same challenges. I run buses also, so figuring out how to do the buses and get them for all of the students and figure out the craziness of a Plan B schedule where you have students coming from all over. Our kids come from 10 different school districts last year, so I serve a really large region. We're pulling kids that I had some kids who travel 2 hours each direction to get to our school last year. So how do you make sure that you can help those kids get to school, and that when they're getting here, that what they're coming for is really worth their time? So I think we have a lot of the same challenges. We also are starting with a remote. Our board actually adopted metrics that we'll be monitoring. We looked at around the country at what some other states have done, and we adopted metrics similar to what New York State will be using for their schools. I'm hoping that some leadership comes from above us to provide us all with that guidance on how we move from Plan C to Plan B. But I think we all took that temperature of our families and our staff and realized that people aren't comfortable yet with the idea of students returning to school, even though we know how essential it is to get our kids back in school. And so I think we're all living that hard balance every single day, knowing we need our kids back, knowing they need to be here and our families need them to be here, but we need to do it in a way that's safe for our community and safe for the broader community. So I think some of our challenges, they're similar, how to really serve those students who didn't thrive in remote learning last spring. I'm sure in the larger districts too, parents are putting together, I think they're calling them pandemic pods. So that's great, getting together and figuring out how to support. How can we make sure that all our families are connected into those? And so even our families who maybe don't have, they're not as active on social media or they're not as connected in, how can we make sure that they are tapping into the community resources that can support them through this really challenging time? We are also retaining, I asked my board to retain the ability to bring students on site in smaller numbers, if we can do that to serve some of those families who don't have great access to internet. You know, we're all struggling with that same issue. We can put hotspots out there, but the hotspots don't serve all of the locations. And we can offer up space at our school and make our Wi-Fi available, but is that really convenient for some of our families? So I think we're all trying to sort through those things. The connection is really real. I heard Dr. Bryan and Dr. Baldwin both talk about that. I think that's something that our school does that is really helpful. All of our students are in a small advisory group. We call it CREW. They meet 30 minutes a day in a group of 10 to 12 students with an adult advisor. That's every day during the normal school year. We're moving that forward now too, and making sure that we really use that existing structure to meet the social emotional needs of our students. So we've got that opportunity to virtually put eyes on and check in with every student every single day. So I'm really pulling on those pieces that exist in our school model already. And that's what I'm hearing from all the plans. Everybody's looking at what do we have, what are our strengths, How can we draw on those? How can we move those forward to support the communities that we serve? And so I think that's the part that we're all in this, you know, we're all looking at the same data and we're looking at the same challenges and hearing the same messages from our families, those who are saying like, I need my kid in school every single day. And I get that. And from those families and those staff members who just can't envision coming back right now because they're looking at the numbers for North Carolina and they can see that they haven't been going in the right direction. And so we're all just trying to straddle all those needs. People need what they need right now. I just keep reminding myself of that every single day and trying to be there and listen and hear and respond and find that line down the middle that makes sure that we're keeping everybody safe, but that we're meeting their emotional and their educational needs to the best extent that we can. So all y'all just send lots of love to all your school leaders and all your teachers because they need it. They need it. I know our families do too. But you know, you can't lose those leaders right now. They are running on, I don't know how many cups of coffee you all are running on every day, but I know mine's, I got to cut it back, man.
Well, thank you very much for that and the perspective from a charter school and what you have with, you know, people having to travel from a long distance. I'm going to move over to Dr. Medeiros because I can see him on my screen there and he looks primed and ready to go. Sir, Dr. Medeiros, would you like to give us an update on Transylvania County schools and what your plans are for this fall?
Yes. thanks for having me here. It's good to, literally, it's good to see everybody on the screen. I look forward to the day that we can all get together. First of all, in Transylvania County, we put out a plan and everybody in the entire county is 100% happy with our plan. Let me just go ahead and say that. as you can imagine, no, we voted to go with option B. We had several reasons for that. Our rates still is not quite as, the numbers are not quite as high as some of our neighbors, and we certainly are sensitive to that. If things were to go in a different direction, we always could go to C, but we started out with B. We have a lot of students that we have great concerns about. The social emotional aspects have been addressed, as mentioned by my colleagues, and we have students that are in very stable, wonderful, loving homes with a lot of support, or they have the resources to provide supports. And we have some students that are in homes that are very concerning to us. Broadband access is always an issue. We have about 10% of our students who do not have reliable internet or internet at all. We've done a lot of different things. We have hotspots that we put out. We have them on our buses that when we roll up for a feeding site for some of our lunches and meals, they can download new information on computers and laptops. We've been doing some of that for a while with virtual days, but there's a big difference, as I've mentioned before, to go from having a plan in place to be out of school for a 3 to 4 day weather event to going to a 90 day event. And so we hope to make it a lot more robust and engaging and exciting for the fall. The option B for us, also recognizes that some parents may not be comfortable with option B. And so we do have a TCS online academy that we are starting, we're calling Online Learning Path. And as of about 45 minutes ago, we had 611 students that had signed up to be in that, which is a good significant amount. That's, I don't know, off the top of my head, that's probably about somewhere around 18% of our student enrollment. It will not be for everyone for some of the reasons that have been mentioned. And we're going to try to make it as engaging as possible, as always. But we will also have the remote learning options in place for the B, because they will go, they'll be divided in two groups. Some students will go on Mondays and Wednesdays. Some students will be face-to-face on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we will use Friday as a variety of things available. Remote interventions, meetings with counselors, professional development for our teachers with our in-house instructional technology facilitators. That's going to be a key part of this because, as you know, the more you do something, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And so we want to continue to try to make what we do as good as we can. My youngest son is completing a master's program online. My oldest son is completing a doctoral program online. We have students that have, you know, all the way from the military to the private sector to community college that do things online. They told us that for years. And so that was one of the reasons we started down that road is because that's just another element of preparing them for a future that's out there. I don't think we'll be going back from any remote learning. What I think you will see is it becomes a great companion. You cannot ever replace the art and craft of a teacher in a classroom. That cannot happen. It won't work well. You can have canned programs. I call them canned. I don't mean that as a slight. You can have a program that you can use to supplement what you're doing. But the art and craft of a teacher's key, not just for the social emotional connection, but every other aspect of relationships you establish that make students want to be part of the learning process. What we can do is to equip our teachers with the very best tools and abilities that we have to make that a wonderful opportunity. And that's what we're all doing. All of my colleagues are doing the very, very same thing. And so, not to get, as I can be, not to get all nerdy, but we don't even know what we can do yet. We're all running down. We've entered a building of a hallway that's dark. We don't know the building very well. The lights are turned off, but we're running as fast as we can down the hallway. And we're just going to try to make it as good as we can. We reserve the right to drop back to see if conditions warrant. We know that the rules of a pandemic, not to sound depressing, the rules of a pandemic are that you try to slow the pace. You try not to overwhelm the system. You try to have the population build up whatever resistance they can, if they can, and you try to provide time for vaccines to be developed. But you don't stop a pandemic. At some point, 100% of us are going to be exposed. It's just when that happens and what we do and how can we react. And so I suspect we will not be back in our schools to any sense of normalcy, whatever that new normal looks like, until sometime in 2021. But on the positive side, I will say this, public school systems are the one entity, and I'm going to brag a little bit, and obviously I'm biased, public school systems are the one entity that can turn on a dime and make things happen. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to hold the wheels on for a community, working with our health professionals. We're going to continue to do that. So I'm actually excited about the future. It's going to be a little bit rough going, perhaps for some at the start, and there are some legitimate concerns and worries. But it's going to be okay. We're going to make it as great as we possibly can. I will say, if I had to pick one thing, transportation, all that's been addressed. But the day will come, but someday when we have fast, reliable, consistent, affordable broadband in every single household in Transylvania County or in Western North Carolina, I will be a very excited person. It won't just have ramifications for education, but it'll have ramifications for economic development and for telehealth and everything else. So I will stop with that plug right there and answer any questions you have.
So Dr. McGarris, I have another question because, you know, you're going to be having the students and the teachers both on campus where some of the other school systems are going to a modified plan B or a full plan C. So is there any protocols in there for, you know, teachers needing to be tested for COVID on a regular basis? Or, and then I guess second is you mentioned you may have to go to a plan C. Is there a point at which, you know, if you have enough teachers test positive for COVID where you would have to make the decision, yeah, we have to go to a plan C because we can't safely do this?
Well, let me take different parts of that. We certainly follow daily the guidance from DHHS, but and I don't mean this in a slight in any manner, but the best partner that I have on this is my local health department director. The DHHS rules seem to be evolving rapidly and changing. And we're waiting for some consistency in that over more than just a couple of days. And so my health department director is the person that I would defer to for your concerns about, you know, when and if we have to close something. We're checking temperatures on everybody, including staff, when they come in. If you are part of the Online Learning Academy, you will be in the school as well. All of our staff will be reporting because they're working. You know, I was asked the question one time not long ago, what happened when the pandemic hit and so many things had to shut down. We never shut down. We kept going. And we actually kept going all through the summer with feeding, and I know my colleagues did too. So we're going to be checking temperatures of staff when they come in, and all of our staff will be in. They will be doing different things. And I will defer to the health department director about if we reach a situation where we would have to change our plans.
Okay, I appreciate that because, you know, each county and each city is different. So you brought up a good point that the local health department will actually have better data and information than NCDHHS, which is, again, no slight on them. If they have all counties in North Carolina as opposed to just focusing on your county. So I really appreciate you giving me that update. And I'm going to move on to another one of our smaller districts, and that's going to be Mr. Huey with Madison County. If I saw his face just a minute ago, let's see if we can get him to pop back up and give us an update on Madison County schools.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank everyone for the opportunity to be here. We are very similar. There's very, very many similarities between us and everyone that's already spoken. So I'm not going to repeat any of that. We are planning to be on an A day, B day schedule. And the same hurdles, the same challenges that everyone else has are the same ones that we're dealing with. Probably the top two being internet access and transportation issues. At present, and I say at present because that can change tomorrow, we're planning to implement Plan B, A day, B day schedule. And on the off day that a student is not face-to-face, they will be following their daily class schedule and hopefully be connected online to that classroom and to that instructor. Now, having already said that one of our main challenges is internet connectivity, we realize that we will have some students that that's just not an option. And so the plan for those students is on their face-to-face day, they will be given a packet of hard copy material that they will work on their off day. Our school schedule is going to be modified to 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And partly that is to reduce transitions in the hallways and then also to help address the transportation issue. So again, a lot of the challenges, a lot of the similarities are very much what's already been stated. But I think that kind of outlines specifically what we're doing and some of the differences between those that have already shared.
Okay, well thank you, Mr. Huey, because I know Madison County struggles because I live here. So, you know, we don't have to go through the internet IT broadband thing. We're all facing that in all counties. And like I said, some of the other issues that I know everybody's facing, hopefully in a separate call, we'll be able to do. Dr. Ayers with Asheville City has been posting things in the chat. So I'm going to give Dr. Ayers a chance to talk about Asheville City schools and also go over what's been posted in the chat on some local and CDC guidelines.
Good afternoon. So I think I can just simply echo a lot of what Tony and the other Jeff have shared regarding the issues we face or the concerns we face. Number one for us in Asheville City is definitely devices in the hands of our students, whether it be an iPad or a Chromebook, and then the connectivity piece with making sure that we're supplying hotspots We've been fortunate, and all of us on this call in school systems have been fortunate to have received some help from the Dogwood Health Trust in offering us some hotspots and some large mass hotspots to put on buses. But we continue to face the very same challenges with getting devices in the hands of students. We were not a one-to-one district prior to this. We have made ourselves as much one-to-one as we can be in, again, an emergency situation, as I think how Jeff addressed that. So we did turn on a dime in the spring. And one of the positive things I think that we can look forward to is when we went home on March the 13th, and then March the 14th, the call was made that we were staying home. We had a lot of staff in our district, as I'm sure the others do, that are not tech savvy, is maybe a kind way to say it, who were really struggling with how to make connections with the remote learning, with the amount of time that we wanted folks to be synchronous and asynchronous so we could see our students. So those are just a few things. One of the exciting things that we've done in our district, and we have created an entire Canvas module for our staff members. Every staff member is going to complete this module, and it tells how to work with students in a remote environment, how to build relationships, how to manage the online platforms that we're using, whether they're Seesaw, Canvas, or any of those pieces. Because again, we don't all have tech savvy folks, and I'm not exactly a tech savvy person as well. So that's something that I think we're looking forward to, and how the fall is going to look very different than it did in the spring. We were going with Plan B. However, just 10 days after we announced Plan B and hearing feedback from families and staff, we decided to go with the Plan C, which is all remote. And initially we're going to offer a platform virtual academy, but I think we're going to go ahead and see if we can house that in district. We are a small district, but we do face some of the very same concerns, issues, barriers that others do. But two little caveats to that, and I know the other public districts are doing this. Buncombe has been running a jumpstart program. We were allotted some additional funds from the state. All of our districts were given a pot of money to do that, and whether we were going remotely or face-to-face with Jumpstart, we were given the option to choose that. And so we are in Asheville City running a face-to-face program that we began on Monday. So we have had a very small group of kids, about 30 kiddos that we have been seeing this week face-to-face, practicing proper social, distancing protocols. But I'm excited about the eagerness of kids, because those are rising second through fourth graders. I've been in a campus until today every morning to greet kids when they came in. It's just a half day program, and they and the few that come in a car, we're running buses too, but their parents are really super excited to send them into schools. And so they're excited about the opportunity to be in the building, whether it's just a 4-hour time frame and it's a small group of kiddos. But we're also doing some face-to-face with our summer middle school magic program. So we are doing some things already to have kids in our building. And it's kind of a litmus test to see how it goes and how we can manage the kids and the social distancing and what it's going to look like when we return to school. Our Plan C says that we are going to reevaluate midway through the first quarter and make a decision for the next quarter, which would be around mid to late October. But when you ask about the barrier, and Christy Cheeks had included questions of what barriers we face, we all know it's hotspots and devices and things like that. But on the flip side of that, I think maybe Tony or Jeff mentioned our gifted kids, our kids who are normally very, very good and very high-flying students. AP classes have had to be shifted. Our CTE program with our internships, it's hard to do an internship when we don't have kids in a building, and some businesses don't feel safe inviting those folks in, such as culinary and other areas. So that's some of the barriers that we're facing, because we're really trying to grow our CTE programs. And of course, we want to address the needs of our, not just our vulnerable population of students, but our gifted population as well. That was rambling.
That was very good.
When I was making notes, I was making notes of what others are saying. I will add, we too are having our staff on site, and we think that best teaching comes when staff members are in their building, secluded in their classroom with the proper equipment and technology and lab materials. And, you know, students can't do a chemistry lab, but they can, however, see the teacher model a lab. And so we are requiring all staff members in Asheville City Schools to report unless there's an extraordinary circumstance, and they will follow that protocol. What I posted in the chat over here was just a what if I get sick, because that was one of the questions listed. This is a document we shared. And then I have some information about local child care, because you're right. I think the person mentioned from the charter or the private that families are creating bubbles or pods to do that. We need to retain our students because our funding is based on average daily membership, and we don't want to lose our kids to homeschool. I think that's all.
Well, I thank you very much for that. And before I turn it back over to Nathan to kind of close things out, I really want to commend all the schools for your hard work and everything. You know, you have your daily job, so to speak, educating students and your normal duties, and then now you have all this added COVID stuff, you know, rules, regulations, things that people have never had to deal with now that you're having to deal with. So you really should all be commended for the outstanding work that you're doing. You know, a couple things I want to leave you with is please, you know, keep in mind how organizations, whether it be nonprofits or whatever, and local businesses can help you. You know, there's a lot of things getting the students re-engaged. We've been talking about, you know, whether they're at-risk youth or exceptional youth, you know, how do you keep them engaged? Because it's fairly easy as a father of two children watching my kids do schoolwork at home, it's easy to get distracted. So, you know, please keep in mind how local businesses and organizations can help. And then secondly, you know, how can especially local businesses and other organizations, you know, you were talking about internships and stuff like that. So be thinking about, hopefully with the youth committee and our next call, we're going to be talking about this, you know, how we're going to do virtual job shadowing, virtual apprenticeships, virtual job interviews, mentorships, you know, some different ideas that we're throwing around on the youth committee. You know, maybe having somebody from, let's say, Biltmore Estate, I'm just throwing a name out there anyway, you know, to be on a marketing class for high school, talking about marketing, or, you know, having somebody, a restaurant culinary person come in talking on a Zoom call or something like that. So I'm asking the schools, you know, don't forget about us out here. We know everybody's kind of in a COVID bubble, but we still want to be engaged with the school system. So don't feel bad that the business folks aren't just heading to your campus, because you don't want us there right now. We all want to be there with you, but please don't forget about us. We want to be a part of the solution with you. So please don't forget about it. You have our support, and I'll turn it over to Nathan, and I thank you all again.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for facilitating today's call. And I think if you have time, I may turn that roll over to you just every Thursday at 1. So if you can just place that on your calendar, you did a great job. Want to sincerely thank all our school systems that joined us. I know you guys have a lot going on, a lot on your plate, and we appreciate you sharing with our region. I'd included this in the chat, but our plan for next week's call will be to hear from our public health leaders in our region. And so we'll work with their schedules, and hopefully we'll be able to have our four counties represented on that from the public health side. We also hope to have Dr. Betsy Tilson, our state public health director, back with us on a future call. And as Jonathan mentioned, for the call with at-risk students and how we can better support them, we'll try to set that up here in the next several weeks, or as we can work out the logistics. So again, we appreciate everybody for joining us. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me. You can go on the Land of Sky website for our COVID-19 page for our resources, or you can reach out to me at nathan@landofsky.org. Again, thanks to everyone for pulling this together. And before I end the call, I just want to give another shout out to Jonathan. There's very few employers in our region that can check every box on a way a business can support our schools. And that's not only K-12, but our community colleges, universities, other organizations in our community. And Jonathan and his team at Advanced Super Braces, they're one of the best employers in our region to be engaged. And they're really working hard to help develop the next generation of talent and to help people fulfill their career goals in Western North Carolina. So we just want to give a shout out to you, Jonathan, and your team for the outstanding work you do. We know COVID-19 has made a lot of the things that we traditionally do more challenging, but you know, you're continuing to move forward and we're grateful for you for that. So again, I hope everyone stays safe, stays well. Have a great rest of your day. And again, thank you for joining us.